Comics podcast. I'm your host Adam, and with me as always is my co-host Jordan. Jordan, what's going on?
I am batastic today, Adam. We are 25 days away from the Batcat wedding as of this episode being recorded. That is very exciting. Like I said, we were just over a month last episode we recorded. We were 31 days, I think, when we recorded our last episode. Now we're 25 days. It'll be even less by the time this episode comes out. And I am so excited about that. Also, one other thing I was going to mention as well. First of all, I'll say related to that, I want to mention that tomorrow, as of us recording this, we were recording this on June 9th, but it won't be out for a few days. But June 10th is Gina Gershon's birthday, who played Catwoman on my favorite animated series, The Batman. So I want to wish a very happy birthday to Gina Gershon.
Yes, happy birthday.
And I also wanted to mention something that I did this past week, which is that I went to a Batman trivia night at this geek bar here in Atlanta. Like you can play video games there. They have cosplay nights. They have trivia nights, about all sorts of, each week they have like a different geeky theme. And it was just Batman this week. So I did what Batman did in Justice League, and I put together a Justice League. And you'll know some of the people that were on my Just League, some of my Bat friends here in Atlanta. Rebecca from Supergirl Radio, Sark, who used to be on the DC Films podcast, Cammy, who's been on, Rebecca and Sark have been on this podcast too, because if you listen to the panel.
The extra episode.
But yeah, Cammy's been on a few times, and she came, and so did her husband Peter.
Cool.
So we had, we weren't called the Just League, we were called the Birds of Play. And we wound up winning trivia night.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you won, because if you had lost, I would have had to fire you. And that's, there are so many better reasons to fire you. That's not one of them. But, if you would have lost.
The thousands of dollars I've spent on comic books over the years finally just earned me a $30 gift card.
Oh, good.
So I got a return on all those thousands of dollars I spent.
Well, you're still in the negative, but you're on your way out. You're on your way back.
Yeah.
Did you buy something? Let me guess. You bought another Catwoman Funko Pop, right?
Well, it's a gift card to the bar.
Oh, so, okay. So no, yeah, okay.
And you couldn't use it. You couldn't use it the night that you got it. So, but I will be using it there in the future.
Can I recommend something? You said there's a cosplay night.
Yes.
I think you should go that night, because you're probably going to find somebody dressed as Catwoman, and that is probably the girl that you should try and get their number. just a friendly piece of advice.
well, thank you, Adam. So, I appreciate the advice.
I can't be your wingman, because I'm all the way in Canada, so I can't physically be there and help you, but I'm trying to do my best here to help you. But we're not talking about... We don't have the audio from the question and answer period from that night, so we're going to review the Flash Season 4 this week. And to help us, we brought on a Flash super fan. He's a returning guest, Brandon Alvarado. How are you, sir? Welcome back.
I'm doing good, man. Super excited to talk some Flash, guys.
Now, if you all remember, that Brandon gave us a wonderful contribution the last time he was here, and that is the hashtag Beware the Bat Rub, and I just wanted to bring that up because I know how much that annoys Jordan. So
you have to say it. You have to say it like they say it in the Beware the Batman animated series theme. Beware the Bat Rub.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm not a voiceover artists, so I'll just say it normally. But I encourage the listeners, as you're listening to this podcast, to tweet Beware the Bat Rub and get it trending, because even though Jordan is not is currently locked out of Twitter for suspicious behavior, I will screenshot the trend topic, if it trends, and I will send it to him, because I'm sure that will annoy him. So get on that tweet, tweet hashtag Beware the Bat Rub as you're listening to this this year's podcast.
Now, also on our last episode with Brandon, we recommended that he check out the Smallville episode Run, and we wanted to get an update from Brandon on whether he checked that out yet or not, and what he thought if he did. So, Brandon?
I have failed this podcast.
Not even one episode?
I haven't been able to, guys. I have so much stuff going on and so many things that I routinely watch being able to squeeze in Smallville. And here's the thing. I'm the kind of guy that if I start watching something, I want to try and go all in.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for me, especially when it comes to like superhero TV shows. I don't like starting in the middle.
Yeah.
I want to start. Right. If I'm going to watch them, I'm going to make it a commitment and I'm going to start from start to finish.
That's what I was recommending you do the last year.
Right.
I was like, just watch Run. And I was like, you got to watch the whole show, man.
Right. So, yeah, I've been catching up with a lot of anime, catching up with some manga that I've been reading. And
Is Batman Ninja included in that anime?
You know what? I actually did see it.
You did?
Yeah, I saw it.
Now, are you with me and you loved it, or are you with Adam and you didn't care for it that much?
I'm going to be honest. I wasn't really happy with the animation, even though it was I liked the interestingness of it. Because interestingly enough, to me, it was a letdown. Let me explain why. Because
you agree with me, so no explanation necessary.
Right. To me, it was a letdown because I am a serious anime fan.
Okay.
So it started out very interesting, and then it went full Adam West, and that lost me. You know what I mean? Like the tone became very, very light, excessively light, and very like carefree in comparison to like serious animes that they carry the seriousness throughout. So
here's a question for you, Brandon. What do you like better, Batman Ninja or Batman Gotham Knight?
Oh, Gotham Knight, 100%.
Okay. Interesting. Because here's the thing. I know. Listen, I love both of them. I love Batman Gotham Knight and I love Batman Ninja. I'm not an anime guy though. But
yeah.
From most anime fans, I've been hearing that they liked Batman Ninja more because it was more. I guess I don't know what.
The animation of Batman Ninja is superior.
Okay.
But the tone and story, like you see Batman Gotham Knight. And it feels like modern Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You watch Batman Ninja, and it starts serious, and then it gets very kind of kooky, Adam West-like. Like, it doesn't take itself seriously enough for you to take it seriously.
Oh, I understand. I mean, one of my criticisms with the movie was the, you know, the big, huge battle at the end with the, you know, the giant monkey and the giant Batman. But there was some really great, darker, more serious stuff. I mean, that Joker Harley scene with Red Hood, I mean, that haunted me.
It does. But then again, when you compare it to the rest of the movie, it feels out of place, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, yeah, I just wanted to get your take on it. I mean, I love the movie, but I was very curious to hear your take. So
yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right, let's get into the news portion of the show.
Yes, indeed. Well, like we usually do, not always, but like we usually do, let's start off with our film news.
Sure.
Which is that Jared Leto's Joker is set to get his own solo film. And he's not only set to star in it, but he's also set to executive produce it. I guess I'll go ahead and start off by saying I am so hyped about this. I think this is awesome. I love Jared Leto's Joker, what we saw of him in Suicide Squad anyway. And I've been, ever since Suicide Squad came out almost 2 years ago now, I've been just so eager to see more of him in the role. And now I'm excited that it looks like he's getting his own solo film. And just like I said with the Elseworlds Joaquin Phoenix one, I could totally see them taking a lot of inspiration from Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo's phenomenal Joker graphic novel.
Oh, you finally read that one?
Dude, I've read it. I read it years ago.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know why you have this. I don't know why you think I read that. We've talked about that book before and how much I love it. I brought it up.
Well, in that case, I was waiting for you to read it.
I told you I loved it before.
All right, then we should review it at some point down the road.
Yes, we absolutely should. I don't know why you think I haven't read it. I told you I'd read it.
I don't know.
I love that book. In my opinion, it's one of the greatest Joker stories ever told. And so I could totally, for me, I feel like that set the template for how to tell a great Joker story with little to no involvement from Batman in it. And so that's what I think we can get out of both of the standalone Joker films, but especially this one. Here's the thing. We've already seen them take some inspiration from that in Suicide Squad, because like Johnny Frost was in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So I can totally see them pulling from that. And then the one last thing I'll say about this, besides how excited I am for it, is that the one thing I'm curious about is whether this means that the Joker Harley film that we had heard about, I wonder if that's still on the table or not. I mean, or whether they've sort of decided to go to sort of split them up and have Harley have her Birds of Prey project and have Joker have this, and whether that's still coming down the line or whether they just decided to separate it completely and just have Harley have her Birds of Prey film, Joker have this, and then they sort of are doing this instead of that. So that's the one thing I'm curious about. But overall, I mean, this news is – I thought this news was awesome. I'm very excited about this.
Well, here's what I'll say. First and foremost, let me clarify that this is not – the report in Variety is not an official confirmation from Warner Brothers. This is from sources of Justin Kroll. Who's got legitimate sources. I'm not disparaging him in any way. But what I will say is that for other sites that are taking this news and writing, Joker story confirmed or Joker standalone movie confirmed, nothing's been confirmed. This is what we're hearing from Justin Kroll's sources. There is a solo Joker movie in development. So I just want to make that clear first and foremost.
Sure. Well, we know. Here's the thing. I would say that about all the DCEU films in development, because actually Mario from Revenge of the Fans, he said something in an article probably a few months ago that I found very interesting, which is that sort of WB's approach right now is to put a bunch of films in development, watch them progress, and then pick from the ones that, progress the best.
So
we hear about all of them, but only some of them are actually going to come to fruition. So that's right. We have to – anytime any of these films are just reported as being in development, it's not a sure thing that it's going to get made. Yeah. I'm just saying if it does get made, though, it's still – I mean, yes, it's in development. It's still – if it does get made, though, I hope it gets made.
Yeah, the reason I pointed that out, though, is because I've already seen, articles from other websites saying – Joker standalone movie starring Jared Leto confirmed, and nothing has been confirmed by Warner Brothers.
Well, the one thing that's confirmed is that it's in development.
Sure,
that's confirmed. Whether it actually comes to fruition, I mean, sure, that might not happen.
It is confirmed that
it's in development.
I just want to caution that.
I get it.
In terms of the idea itself, I'm on board, and I agree because I like what I saw of Jared Leto's Joker. The problem for me was I didn't see enough to make a fully formed judgment on him. And so I'm one of the ones that says, let me see more of him and then I'll make a fully formed judgment. But I like the brief bits that I saw. So I'm eager to see more of his portrayal. The other thing that, I'll echo your sentiments, Jordan, that, I was questioned by one of our listeners, Stephen Marshall. Well, why? Because Superman fans, rightfully so, are upset that there's yet to be anything official about Man of Steel sequel. So he's like, he pointed out that he doesn't understand why the Joker needs another solo movie. And I pointed out, well, technically, do we need other story, you know, so many other stories, like standalone stories? For instance, did we need the Joker graphic novel by Brian Azzarello? No, we didn't need it.
I needed it.
But hold on a second. We didn't need it because he appears in thousands of other comic book stories.
I did need it.
Hold on a second. But the creative team wanted to tell the story, and it ended up being one of the greatest Joker stories ever told, in my opinion. So
And I needed it.
But I'm saying need from a point of view of, look, we don't need any form, any piece of entertainment.
Yes, I do. I absolutely.
I'm just saying from a lot. Look, you're interjecting where you don't need to. I'm in agreement with you. I'm saying that there is no, technically, from a technical standpoint, there is no need for any movie or comic book or anything. But
Batman is as crucial to my existence as food, water, and shelter.
You're interrupting me. The point is, these things exist because the creative team want to tell a good story, or have an interesting take on the story. So I get it. So, but from, if you're upset that there's no Man of Steel announcement, that has no bearing on whether it's a good call to develop another Joker film. Look here, and I'll go one step further. Here's why I think this is a good, or, well, it's a good idea, because like I said, I want to see more than a Joker. But here's why I think it makes sense from a business perspective. Walter Hamada has taken over at DC. He comes from the world of horror over at New Line, which their principle is smaller budgeted films with a maximum profit, correct? If you look at It, if you look at the Conjuring franchise, Annabelle, that's what's happened. So
yeah.
Now you take the Joker, who has as much cultural awareness in pop culture as Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, etc. But you can make a Joker movie, so you can have that same public awareness and make a Joker movie for far less than $150 to $200 million. In fact, if you're making whichever Joker movie happens, it should be less than $100 million. If you're making this for $100 million plus, then your budgeting is off.
You could do this for barely anything and make it great. I mean, you with a character like the Joker, I mean, you don't need special effects really for. I mean, think about it. Take the Joker graphic novel.
Yeah.
And think about if you obviously I don't think they're going to directly adapt that like panel for panel, but just think about just hypothetically if they did adapt that for panel for panel, is there a single thing that you really need like anything super expensive to do for that?
Special effects wise, no. CGI wise,
except
no.
Maybe Killer Croc because he's in it. Maybe Killer Croc.
Yeah, but they went with prosthetics and makeup in Suicide Squad. They didn't go with
that's true, but it's still expensive though, isn't it?
Well,
the prosthetics.
I think it's still cheaper than CGI.
But
so from Walter Hamada's
beautiful.
From Walter Hamada, what's that? Oh yeah.
I was saying his line from Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
I'm beautiful.
I didn't get what you were doing there. Is Jordan looking in the mirror? Or what's going on there? But so from my perspective, if you look at the world Walter Hamada comes from, this announcement makes a lot of sense, or this potential film makes a lot of sense. Now, the other thing I'll say about remember you brought it up that Mario at Revenge of the Fans said, you know, Warner Brothers put similar projects in development at the same time, and then the best option wins out.
Yes.
Like we saw that with, and I think, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure that what happened was Gotham City Sirens was a thing, and then you know, crap happened with David Ayer, and at the same time, Birds of Prey was being developed, and it looks like because Birds of Prey now has a director, and where it's supposed to be moving forward in early 2019, so that movie looks like it won out.
Well, in that case, I think they might have made the wrong choice because you don't pick any movie that doesn't have Catwoman over any movie that does have Catwoman.
But personally, and I know the way you feel about Catwoman, and I think you'd rather have her in a Batman film than what you would have gotten in Birds of Prey, which is her going up against. So I think
I'd rather have her in both, but if I had to pick one, it would be Batman for
right.
sure.
Okay.
It would be the Batman. But it would be Matt Reeves' film.
But anyway, like, so basically, what's happened with Birds of Prey? I know that Deadline, I think, said that the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie was still was supposedly starring Joaquin Phoenix movie from Todd Phillips is still in development. Deadline can say that, and that's all well and good, but I think, in my personal opinion, I think differently. I think that project was put into development by the old regime at DC Entertainment. I think Walter Hamada came in. I think he said, we like the idea of a standalone Joker film, but we want it inside, set inside the shared universe.
Do you think the Elseworlds banner as a whole is still on the table, or do you think Walter Hamada scrapped
that? I think they might go forward with the Elseworlds banner as a whole, but I don't think, as much as Deadline keeps saying it's still in development, I think we're going to hear a little further down the line here that project is gone by the wayside and is no longer happening, in my opinion.
Well, I hope not, because that sounded really compelling to me, too. But
I'm just saying, to me, it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. But I'm on board with the idea of a Jared Leto standalone Joker film, especially if they take inspiration from the Joker.
If we got that scene, which I consider maybe the define, and just slight spoiler here, so if you haven't read Joker, skip ahead 30 seconds. But if we got a scene, if we got in live action the scene that I consider perhaps maybe the definitive Joker scene, explain, like, that shows just what kind of a monster he is, which is the scene where he attacks that elderly couple, and then Johnny Frost asks him who they were, and he says, "Who cares?"
Yeah.
If we got that, I literally think that scene epitomizes who the Joker is. It's absolutely horrifying, but it epitomizes who the Joker is, perhaps more than any other scene I've ever seen. If we got that in live action and so many other iconic scenes from that comic, oh my goodness, I would be just, that would be amazing.
So Brandon, what's your take on all this?
Now, Brandon, are you getting attacked by the Joker over there?
No, I'm not serious. Well, in my opinion, and here's when it comes to stuff like this, that especially with everything going in DC, there's so sadly, as fans, when it comes to DC, we've had given the short end of the straw because all we can do is speculate. You know what I mean? With everything that's happened with Justice League and that aftermath, all the changes, the only things we know for sure is really only three movies. And even with the three movies we have, apart from Wonder Woman, all we hear is rumors of good things. So, in my opinion, if they do make a Jared Leto Joker movie, I don't think the Todd Phillips movie is going to happen. Because I don't think, from a business standpoint, Warner Brothers is not going to want two competing versions in theaters of the same character. We understand the difference, and we would love to see that. But the general public will be confused. And I don't think that's the position that Warner Brothers wants to be in. In my opinion, because I allowed myself to watch the extended cut of Suicide Squad, I really enjoyed Jared Leto's Joker because I saw a bit more of him. And I love his interaction with Harley Quinn more than anything. So I wouldn't mind seeing more of that. But now with the idea that we still don't know what's going on with the Batman yet, I can't feel hype about a Joker movie because it's all going to hinge around what's going to happen with the Batman.
Well, it's interesting because what I find interesting about is that you know, Mario at Revenge of the Fans has indicated on some of the L Fanboy podcast that from what he's heard and everything else, that Warner Brothers and Reeves have worked out, you know, they had a meeting and they've worked things out. And it's funny that after Mario had mentioned that, now because of that, we're seeing movement on, you know, Birds of Prey. And
right.
It's like the timing seems to line up that okay, you know, Warner Brothers and Matt Reeves have met. They've made decisions internally, whatever those are. And now we're hearing, you know, we're seeing momentum on, you know, Birds of Prey, the Batgirl. You know, we heard that Christina Hodson is hired to write Batgirl, and now we're hearing about this Jared Leto Joker thing in development. I think
and like you said, I believe that the Jared Leto, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the route they take, because you already have an amazing actor wants to continue to explore this character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would love to see it. But I when it comes to stuff like this, I can't really feel hyped. It's like, for example, it wasn't until February, I think it was February, mid-March, that we heard the last news in regards to the Flash movie, that supposedly was going to start filming. We have not heard anything in like 3 months. So it's like really hard for me to be hyped about it.
We heard Kiersey Clemons say she was still Iris recently.
Yeah. Right, but that's coming out of her mouth, not like an official, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because actors say they're in talks, actors say that they're still in for the movie, but they supposedly started filming, or we're going to start filming in the summer, but there's nothing there. Wow. So, I mean, hopefully... I'm really crossing my fingers that we hear some Flash news on Comic-Con.
I think that's what they're waiting for, personally.
Yeah, I need that. Like, for example, I'm the kind of guy that I need a sure thing at this point, especially with all the turmoil that's happened in the last couple of years and how everything's been changing every month.
Yeah.
It's really I take everything with a grain of salt and distance.
But you'd theoretically be on board with a Jared Leto Joker movie.
Oh, yeah. I want to see more of that. I think that if we're going to see that, I want to see him without Harley. I want to see just the Joker. I want to explore him.
Here's why I think that we're going to hear more announcements more official announcements out of Comic-Con, because remember this year Marvel is not attending because of
true.
They want to maintain secrecy with Infinity War sequel or whatever it is, or whatever,
right.
whatever that ends up being called. So that is the perfect opportunity for Warner Brothers to take advantage of the lack of Marvel and really get their ducks in a row and start making some official statements.
One other thing that occurs to me is that even though Warner Brothers hasn't, you know, they haven't, since the BVS announcement, they haven't really used Comic-Con to make huge announcements.
Right.
You know, but we have to remember the regime just changed again.
Yeah.
So perhaps the new regime wants to do that. So.
Right.
Well, I want to touch on something Brandon said real quick.
Sure.
Which is, he was saying that, like, you know, we get it if there's multiple Jokers because, you know, we see it in the comics all the time. I mean, the Joker graphic novel is an example of that. It's an out-of-continuity story, and then you still got the in-continuity Joker. But I would say the way to make general audiences get accustomed to that is to start doing it. They're never going to get adjusted to getting to, you know, being used to that unless the studio starts doing things like that. And so I think that doing it that way in the DCU AOM line, starting back in 2014 with Just League War, and they have their in-continuity films and then their out-of-continuity films, I believe that was the stepping stone, and now DC is saying, okay, we're doing the same thing in live action.
Well, I cannot entirely agree with you for two reasons. Reason number one, the animated movies are made for fans because the fans are the ones that buy it. That's the reason those movies are made. So I can't really say that I agree with that. For now, in live action, I understand. I get what you're doing. Interestingly enough, did you guys notice that WB is doing the same thing with the Jungle Book, like the Disney extra version, and they're doing like their own version of it. So it's not a phenomenon that's unheard of.
Yeah, but the difference is it's two different studios. Whereas correct. The Joker would be one.
Exactly.
So it's, but the way to get what I'm trying to say is the way to get general audiences, you know, acclimated to seeing that is to start doing it.
I have a solution.
But the thing is, from a business standpoint, I don't think Warner Brothers is going to want to take risks like that.
I have a solution to both issues.
Right.
Yeah. Here it is. You put Joker, the Jared Leto Joker movie in theaters because it's part of the universe, right?
Right.
And then you make the Todd Phillips version for the DC Universe streaming service.
I agree 100%.
That is.
But keep in mind, though. Who is the DC streaming service built for?
Fans, but that's the perfect. That's what I'm saying.
No, and it fixes the issue, but it doesn't fix the issue of exposing that to general audience. But it is an option, and I actually agree with that 100%. I am actually I am a big believer that I think that one of the things that DC needs right now on TV, we need an Elseworlds show. We need a show that just tells Elseworlds stories. I dream for the day that I see a show like Twilight Zone-esque, where every episode is a different Elseworlds story.
Also, like anthology. That would be very anthology cool. Kind of, yeah.
That exactly. Would be very cool. Like episode one can be episode one and two can be a two-parter where they do a live-action Gotham by Gaslight.
Yeah.
Like episode three can be an Elseworlds flash story.
I hope Selena's in it, like in the movie, not in the comic.
Right. Right. But you see what I'm saying? That's my dream. That would be awesome. One of those things that it's DC accommodating people like that.
Yeah.
But hey, Adam, speaking to your point, as long as I get to see the movie, then I'd be fine. I don't care where it is.
Right. So but because the reason I say that is that there was a report that came out. I can't remember where I saw it. It may have been. I don't want to do a disservice to this. It's, you know, Brandon Lowe from that guest appears on
Holy Backcast.
Yeah,
yeah.
He has his own podcast, and on there he did it. There was a James Bond episode, and he talked to a guest on that show was one of the people that works at DC, one of the consumer products people or whatever, what have you, whatever it was.
Right.
And they had said that, you know, that what they're hearing is that the streaming service is going to launch at the end of August. And
I heard that, yeah.
And that it's going to feature older television shows, animated series, the newer shows that they're, you know, the newly produced shows, and film.
Right.
So if you're going to do film, if you're going to include films into the bunch, why not pull on Netflix and create films exclusively for your streaming service?
Of course.
The Joker would be one of them, or the
Tom right. Phillips. I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be. Right. Yeah, it sounds like the streaming service is gonna have like everything that we were like saying. I hope that it has not only what they've announced, but you know all that other stuff. It sounds like we're getting our wish, which is just awesome.
And by the way, I'll just say because of what I recently heard about the streaming service. As soon as it launches, I am going to only have sports channels on my TV and watch only the streaming service.
Wait, what about the CW shows and Gotham?
They'll be on there. Don't worry.
Do you think they'll be on there?
They're not going to be on the streaming service at.
Well, okay, I'll keep the CW. How about that?
What about Fox? Gotham?
I'll keep Fox for look. I'm pissed off at Fox because, like I said, I love Lucifer and they canceled my show. P.S. I'm going to do another public service announcement. All the listeners, go on Twitter and do me a favor. Hashtag save Lucifer. Hashtag pick up Lucifer. But Gotham is only 10 episodes, according to Cameron Bickanova.
Well, a good segue because that's what we're going to get into. But finish what you're saying.
Yeah, so Gotham is only 10 episodes. So either I'm going to keep Fox or I'm going to... I will pick up Fox when the 10 episodes air, or I will find other ways to watch Gotham.
Hulu.
And I'll leave it at that.
What about Watchmen on HBO and Pennyworth on Epic?
Yeah, the beautiful thing is my cousin has HBO, so when Watchmen starts, I could just go to her house, have my aunt make me a nice meal, and watch Watchmen.
What about Pennyworth?
Well, Epics I can purchase. I can purchase that separately. I don't need I don't need 10,000 cable channels. And by the way, if I unlike in the States, for example, where you guys have to pay for Star Trek Discovery, it was aired on a Canadian channel here, so I could just keep limited basic cable and probably see Alfred because it's probably picked up somewhere here. So
you're the one.
Hey, listen, it pays to live in Canada. We don't have Trump as a figurehead, and we get cool stuff on TV that we don't have to pay for.
You don't get CW seed shows, so you can't watch Vixen and Freedom Fighters
Parade. There are ways around that. If the CW or an old Canadian network wants to give me that, there's ways I'll find it. Moving on,
that's a nice segue. You even brought it up in our TV news, which is Cameron Bikondova was doing an Instagram story where she said, the first thing she said was that she's heard that Gotham Season 5 will only be 10 episodes. And, of course, it had been previously speculated and even, I believe, sort of reported that it would likely be 13 episodes. And somebody, said something to her, and then she replied. She reiterated that she'd heard it would only be 10 episodes, but that she wasn't sure and that it could be 13. So what I'll say about this is that here's the thing. Cameron is a star on the show. So I would imagine that whoever she heard this from, the 10-episode thing, is an accurate source because she has contacts at Fox because she's a star on the show. So I'd imagine that would be, accurate information. That being said, perhaps things are shifting around or something, though, because I would just completely think that, yes, it is 10 confirmed. I would think that if it weren't for the case that 13 makes more sense, not just because, it makes more sense because I want three more episodes because Gotham's my favorite show on TV right now. But it also makes sense because Gotham needs 100 episodes for syndication, and it won't hit that until the 12th episode of season 5. So it would make sense that they do 13. So I'm sort of – we'll eventually find out officially for sure. I'm crossing my fingers for 13, but obviously there was a time when I was very, very worried we weren't going to get any episodes, and right now I'm just overjoyed that we are getting, at least some number of season 5 episodes. I need to see my OTP back together happened at the end of season 4. But I'm inclined to believe Cameron because I'd imagine that her source is probably accurate, but at the same time, it sort of makes sense to me that they go 13. So I don't know.
Here's the thing. If it ends up being 10, I've watched some great shows that only have 10 episode seasons. So I'm not concerned that we'd get a good season and a great finale with only
10 episodes. I'm not suggesting that, but I always want more.
Well, of course, but I'm just saying I'm giving you the alternative of that. I've seen plenty of shows that have 10 episodes and have been really, really, really good. So
Krypton's a great example.
Yeah, Krypton and Cobra Kai, the Karate Kid revival, which is great if you're a fan of that franchise. It's good TV has been done in 10 episodes.
Right.
Brandon, any thoughts on that?
Personally, I'm waiting for season 4 to come on Netflix so I can binge it.
Okay, I see.
So I can get caught up. So I'm not caught up, but I think that when it comes to, let put it this way, Gotham was given another chance to do their final run.
Yeah.
Less is more.
Yeah.
I think they succumb. I think too much is too much. When it comes to series like this, like some shows, and I think superhero TV in general, this is way too much. You need to know when to stop and give us a good story, because sometimes that ends up being more satisfying. I know we're going to talk about it, but I think that's one of the things that kind of affected The Flash's storytelling this season.
Yeah,
it was just too many episodes.
Yeah, I think all the superhero shows on the CW should pull a Black Lightning and go down to 13 episodes.
You see, I I completely disagree with that, because one of my criticisms with Black Lightning this season was that I did feel like the finale felt rushed. And for me, I have no problem with filler episodes. I've said this before. I don't care how many. I'd watch a season if it was 50 episodes, because I just always want to see more of my favorite characters.
Most people don't.
Here's
the thing. In my case, one of the things that I truly enjoy, and I know where you're coming from, because if a filler allows you to enjoy the characters, because there's one thing about making a filler episode that's there just to fill, and then you have a filler episode that allows you to explore something different about a certain character. Those fillers are awesome. Like, I want that. But a lot of times, filler just feels like just fluff.
Sure.
So,
I just want more time. I always will take more time with these characters that I love than less time. So,
well, in my case, I prefer quality. I want the time that is spent to the character with the character is quality time, because anything below that to me harms the character. That's my view.
I get that. I just don't think that. I don't think there's been many instances where I haven't felt that it's been quality. Certainly not Gotham. Gotham had just finished up a 22-episode season, and there wasn't a single episode of it that I didn't love. So I think here's the thing. Obviously, I'm so happy that it's getting a fifth season and then it'll have 10 episodes. I'm just saying that if I had my way, I'm still going to want more. Like,
I always want more. If you had your way, the fifth wouldn't be the last. But
of course not. Of course not. I'd watch 20 seasons.
Unfortunately, we're at the mercy of Fox, and we all know what kind of network Fox is, right? So they're the cancel happy network. So it is what it is. We'll have to wait. But I don't think we'll have to wait long, because I think Comic-Con will give us the answer, one way or the other.
Yeah.
What's the next piece of news?
Final piece of news is something that, here's the thing. I don't know how relevant this is going to be to the listeners, because it's technically occurring before this episode will drop. But I'm going to say it anyway, because in case the listeners miss this, I want to make sure everybody has a chance that they know about it and they can go back and check it out. And also I just want to express my excitement over this, because I'm so excited. Tom King is going to be guesting on NBC's Late Night with Seth Meyers this Tuesday, which is June 12th, and he's going to be talking about the Batcat wedding. And I am really so excited to see what he has to say about my OTP finally tying the knot. Like I said, we're so close. As of this episode being recorded, like I said, we're 25 days, and I can't do the math just off the top of my head, but, yes, I can. It's June 12th, so it's 3 days away, so it's 22 days. When this episode of Seth Meyers airs, we'll be 22 days away from the Batcat wedding, and I'm just so excited. I can't wait to see what he has to say. Tom King, anytime he does an interview about the Batcat relationship, I just love it, because he understands this relationship so well. He clearly has so much love for this relationship, just like I do, and I'm always so happy to hear him talk about it. I just watched an interview that he and Joelle Jones did with Sci-Fi Wire recently about it, and I can't wait to see him on Seth Meyers. I'm definitely going to be checking this out, and I can't wait.
And Jordan will recap us, because I certainly as hell won't be watching. Are we done with the news? Is that it?
Yes. Is that, and Brandon, did you have anything to say that's nicer than what Adam said about that?
No, I said,
I enjoy it. I enjoy that those things are happening, because it's not every day that you have that kind of announcement in a show that everybody watches about comic books. And the fact that this is a comic book event, a la Death of Superman, a la Trials of Earth, it's a huge DC event that now everybody's going to know about. It's going to bring more people to buy comics, and I like that.
Reminds me sort of what they did. That's a great point. It reminds me sort of what they did with the Death of Superman in the 90s, where it was like it was on the news and everything. And
it was like people that don't read comics have probably have an issue of the Death of Superman because of that. So the fact that you have creators that we love and support actually going on air and talking about that in front of a million viewers is great exposure. And that's the thing. That's the kind of thing that like puts us as fans in the forefront, because those kind of events is a way of DC doing something for the fans. So it's actually pretty cool.
I have no problem with that. I love the fact that comic books and DC is getting exposure. I just won't be watching because everybody knows my stance on Batman and Catwoman being married and the Hoopla. So I'm glad that it's happening. And I'm so confident that I'll hear enough of it from you on the podcast. It'll have been like I watched it anyway, so why waste my time?
But
with that, let's move on into the main topic of the show. And that is season 4 of The Flash.
Yes.
What I will say, I'll start this off, is that overall, for me personally, the weakest season of The Flash so far. There are things I liked. There are things I disliked. But overall, it didn't live up to seasons 1, definitely not 1 and 2. And I will still maintain that even 3 was better than it. And so far, it's continued a trend for me where season 4 of the CW shows that have gone that far have been the weakest. So I'm hopeful that Supergirl will buck that trend. And so will Legends of Tomorrow and Black Lightning, if and when it gets there. But as of right now, that unfortunate trend has continued for me. But I'll start off with one of the things some of the things I did like.
Are we spoilers?
Oh, yeah. When we start talking about we're just going to assume that you're here because you've seen the show. If you haven't, go finish watching the amount of episodes you have to watch. And then
go run, Barry, run. Yeah. And
then come back and listen to this episode. But one of the things I actually really did like was the villain himself, the main villain, the Thinker. Because I think the speedster aspect of it has been overused for 3 consecutive seasons. And so it was a nice change of pace, no pun intended.
That fight scene in one of the latter episodes with him, like that hallway fight scene, oh my goodness, he was an awesome villain, I thought.
But I like what I liked about it was, and then was the fact that Barry Allen and the team had to really exhaust all their options to defeat the Thinker.
I thought you were going to say they really had to think to defeat the Thinker.
I had to skirt my way around that because that pun would have been way too obvious. So they really had to, come up with different scenarios as opposed to, we'll just run this way or do this and create like a whirlwind or whatever the hell the case may be and defeat him. So that part I liked about it. And, the way that the Thinker was able to co-opt people's bodies and abilities to sustain himself and to further his cause was actually quite disturbing when he did it.
I mean, that scene when he took over, the one that in particular stands out to me is two of them actually, when he took over Izzy's body and Ralph had to watch that, and then when he took over to Ralph's body later and Team Flash had to watch that. Like, it was really devastating because, when he took over Ralph, I had a feeling that Ralph was going to be okay because, I mean, he's the Elongated Man. I mean, I felt like they weren't going to kill him off that quickly. Then again, Arrow did kill off Black Canary, Laura Lance version, after only one season with her actually in that mantle. But I had a feeling they weren't going to do that again with Elongated Man this time. But it was still devastating seeing that happen and seeing Team Flash have to react to that. And then also, like I said before, when Ralph, after trying to help Izzy all episode, and then when he had to watch that happen to her. I mean, and then also the episode, I mean, every time I'll bring up when at the prison at Iron Heights, when it was Iron Heights, right, where they were at, where he took over all of those.
Right.
meta, where he took over all of those that were trying to break out with Barry. I mean, it was just because, like, Barry had developed a bond, especially with what's her name?
Hazard.
Hazard, thank you.
Yeah.
Developed a bond with Hazard, and so that was devastating.
Yeah. I really, like I said, I really enjoyed him as a villain. And like I said, the way he co-opted people and their powers was, you know, when the chairs, whatever, I guess wires, or I like to call them tentacles because they remind me of Brainiac. So when he was, you know, clasped them in his tentacles, that was really gruesome. And I mean, obviously they didn't show anything like Game of Thrones or anything like that, but still, for the CW, that was pretty, you know, well done and quite horrifying for CW standards. Because you mentioned it, actually, before I get there, I like the part of how, like, his whole reasoning for doing what he was doing, because to him, society had gotten, they were too obsessed with, you know, I think he mentions it about technology, and, you know, I think he mentions something about us being buried in the smartphones and all that.
People were disregarding knowledge, history, progress, things that mattered.
And I think, look, obviously he went about it the wrong way. But when you compare that to our current modern society, I don't disagree with him. I think he's right in that regard.
Right.
It reminded me a bit of Enchantress and Suicide Squad. She sort of had a somewhat similar motivation.
Well, except minus the belly dancing.
Okay, yes, minus the belly dancing.
Hashtag thinker belly dancing.
Yeah. I don't know. If they want to have a scene where Killer Frost belly dances, I'm all for that. But, you know, let's put that on the screen. But no.
In terms of the motivation, you see what I'm saying? It's somewhat similar.
Yeah, for sure. But so.
And I love that backstory too that they gave to Vo. You know, first tying it in back to season one with Harrison Wells, and you know he was there at Harrison Wells' speech at the particle accelerator and all. I thought that was really cool. And sort of the other thing I'll say is that with the bus metas this season, they sort of did, it reminds me of what Smallville did at the end of season 4/ the beginning of season 5, where they had a second meteor shower.
Spoiler,
so they had more meteor
free.
Or in season 6, when they had the people come out of the zoners, come out of the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
And so it's a way to get more, in terms of Smallville, it was a way to get first more meteor freaks and then more, more villains just in terms of the zoners. But here, it was a way to get more, on The Flash, it was a way to get more metas. And I think there was even a scene where Cisco referred to, he was like, some of them are the OG metas. And then these are like the new metas or whatever, which I thought was funny.
So I agreed with his motivation, like his reasoning, because it makes sense with today's time. I also did like the flashback episode they gave for him, because it humanizes him and it made you sympathize with him. And then you see how far he's gone, like the wrong way, from that flashback, right? So. But even just, you know, you sympathize with him because he truly, at one stage, he really did love his wife, right? And then,
right.
And then you find out that he's sort of manipulating her so that she forgets. When every time she sort of comes to fruition that he's in the wrong, and she tries to go about when she figures out what his actual plan is, and she challenges on him every time, he basically brain wipes her. A la Men in Black, and we basically, she starts over again. So
the scariest part of that, because I found that terrifying, but the scariest part of it was when she so there's a scene where she discovers that he's been using the Weeper's tears on her, right?
Yeah.
And the scariest part of that to me was when she realizes, not only does she realize he's been using the Weeper's tears on her, but that she realizes that she's discovered that before.
Yeah.
Like, that's what was so scary. It's like, can you imagine that? Can you imagine discovering that something bad happened, and then realizing that you knew about it before, but had your memory erased, and realizing that there's a good chance it's going to happen again, like, that was nuts. I was like, that was like straight out of like a really like a horror or like a super suspenseful movie. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, like a suspenseful mystery movie. I was like, as soon as she discovered that she'd been, you know, that it had happened before, that she discovered it, that she left herself a message, and that, oh my goodness, that was terrifying.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll bring up, and then I'll throw it over to Brandon because I want to get his thoughts. But the you mentioned, I think, the fight scene where they were,
yeah, yes, where yes, they were
inside the Thinker's mind, if you will.
Yeah. Oh, no. I wasn't mentioning that one. I was talking about the hallway fight scene when first he and
Percy in Argus. Oh, that's in the. That is on episode 22 when he's getting called out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Which, first of all, I love anytime they do the little mini crossovers, like where one character appears. Right. And so I loved seeing Diggle there. Well, at that point, it wasn't technically Diggle, but then they did wind up bringing Diggle into that episode, Diggle.
And I love whenever the Flash goes and gets him.
And he throws up.
Yeah.
And I love how they were trying to find the trash can. And like she brought, I think it was Caitlin maybe, who brought one of like the you know, those wicker trash cans. And they were like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That was so funny. But no, that fight scene, I mean, yes, the one you're talking about, too. In the dream sequence, that was awesome too. But this one was the one that really stood out to me, was with the where he's like, basically DeVoe was like a Mazo in this season, where he can utilize all these different characters' powers. And when he's wiping through that room, just like, and he's like, oh, with the, especially the one that stood out to me is when he uses Hazard's powers and he's like making everybody, oh my goodness, that was just, that whole scene, it was just, oh, like the ultimate, showing the ultimate badassery that the
player
has.
Yeah, yeah. So I did. You're right. I totally I forgot. I didn't forget about that scene. It wasn't the one I was talking about, but it was. And then the music, they were, you know, the opera music
playing. Yes. Was kind of. It reminded me of Lionel Luthor.
Yes, I was going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it so creepy? It worked with Lionel, and then it worked here.
It definitely adds to the creep factor. But then you know, also, like I was saying, the Matrix sort of style fight, where they're inside his brain or inside his mindscape, it was so cool. And it reminded me so much. I'm like, damn, it reminds me of how much I love the Matrix film as I was watching that. And I'm like,
I love the part where Flash wore Elongated Man as a cape. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that was
Cool.
That was kind of cool, but it's funny because there was some slow-mo involved, and I'm thinking, wow, you know what? For a character like the Flash, whose whole thing is moving really fast, this Matrix bullet time slow-mo kind of thing really works for him. but I love that fight. I think it's one of the best. It's one of the best sequences with the Flash in the show. Period.
Wait, so which one?
The Matrix time kind of
thing. Oh, okay, that one. Okay.
Especially because all the Agent Smith they all converge on the Flash, and the way he, you know, the way he disperses of them was really cool. So I wonder, Brandon, is there anything you want to add specifically about the Thinker and or the fight scenes we mentioned that we missed that you want to touch on?
Well, I mean, is it okay if I go ahead and with my overview of it? So
yeah, go ahead.
I really enjoyed. Now, let me disclaimer. I don't think that making speakers big villains in every season is an issue. I think it has to do with how they use the character more than anything.
Fair enough.
Because I think what made the Reverse Flash in the first season so amazing is not the fact that he was a speedster, is because Tom Cavanagh produced such an amazing performance and his plan was so unique. That's what made that character work.
Sure.
And it, as you progress to season two, Zoom was just someone that wanted to be faster so he wouldn't die. That's interesting. But then when you get to Savitar, it really feels monotonous because it's just another version of Barry. That feels lonely. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I loved, you know, I know we're not reviewing season three, but I loved Savitar's motivations. Like I love the idea that he was, well, you say, I think that's an oversimplification to say that he was just feeling lonely.
Oh, no. I'm just giving you an example. What I'm trying to say is that you see speedsters as big bads in every season. It's not an issue. I don't see it as an issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It all depends on how you use it. When I mention Savitar like that, it's just that I'm just grading, because when you look at all the seasons, the storyline and motivations of the Rare Slash are just above and beyond any other speedster that we've seen.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's supposed to be, because he is the quintessential Splash villain.
Sure.
But what I'm trying to say is that when people, like, the normal trope is, oh, we're going to use a different kind of big bad. It's not going to be a speedster because we've done speedsters too much. I think that's the wrong way to see it, because you got to have someone that can physically match the Flash in different apps, especially in the same thing he's doing. But it's all about their plan. You know what I mean? And I think that's what made this, for example, and the Thinker as a villain actually proves that. What made him interesting wasn't the fact that he was super smart. It's how he executed his plan. So you can grab any meta, any villain with any powers, and just give him a good plan, and you can make it work. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
I'm trying to say. So now I love the Thinker. I think my issue with him, and not that I have an issue with the character, because I love the actor, his portrayal of DeVos is amazing.
Right.
But my only issue with this is for me personally, as it was getting towards the final episodes, he became a lot less interesting for me in comparison to how it starts, because as the episodes progress, it becomes less about his intellect and more about how many powers he has. And personally, I like the fact that in the final episode, when they beat him, they do beat him because they find a way to outsmart him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the story would have been more efficiently if they actually made it official that they beat him because of that. Because in reality, when you analyze it, they beat him because they did outsmart him. Like, he was not planning on them to take Ralph Fiennes out.
Yeah.
And when they did that, they kind of outsmarted him, so they beat him in his own game, so they beat Thinker. So that's I love that about the finale.
Well, but I think they also, part of it was that they beat him with emotion. He wasn't expecting, like, they were able to get an
correct
hand on him because he wasn't
correct
taking that into account.
Right, but as you see the Thinker, like, from episode 15 onward, when he collects more than one meta in the same episode, he became less interesting of a villain because he became more generic, because it's all about all the powers he has.
He became like a Mazo. He was like a Mazo, right, while also being a genius.
Right, but there was less of the genius. Like, there was more, there was less of less. Now, give or take, I'm going to be honest. Maybe in my mind, because I've seen the season, I would say I've seen the season almost twice now, up to a certain degree, because I kind of reviewed it before the episode. But maybe it's just because we already saw the Thinker, and now the last episodes, they were just focusing more on how the team is going to come up with a solution. Because there was a lot less Thinker in the last final episodes and a lot more Flash and how they're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
It was interesting to me. I'll bring this up to you guys. They brought on Neil Sandilands as a series regular this season, which they didn't do with Teddy Sears in season 2. Well, I guess he's the only other example of one they didn't. But my point being, he was a series regular this season, but it was kind of sort of weird to me that they did make him a series regular because of the nature of the character. He wound up not even being played by Neil Sandilands for quite a big majority of the season. So it was interesting to me.
In the middle,
Neil Sandilands sort of got the Nicholas D'Agosto treatment from Gotham, where he's a series regular, but he's not in very many episodes
well,
at all.
And the good thing about that is he's fine because he's getting paid. So for him, it's...
Yeah.
For him, it's fine. And, like, I didn't mind it necessarily. I just thought it was very odd that they made him a series regular and that he was only in so few episodes.
I think they probably did that mainly because the bigger episodes of that character, he played it. I think that's probably why.
Right.
Because when you look at there's certain episodes that are like big Hallmark Thinker episodes, he was the main Thinker. Like, it wasn't another body.
I'm just saying that he wasn't in very many episodes. I mean, it's surprising to me because, like, they, I mean, a lot of times they don't make the big bad of a season, a series regular. Like, I would say it's like 50%
that's
of the
true.
Time.
Oh, but the other thing also, now something that you're saying very interesting, is the fact that they actually revealed him from season the first episode, which is the first for the Flash.
Yeah, that's true.
They from the very first episode, they revealed him as the Thinker. You already knew who he was.
That's true. Yeah.
You just find out the team doesn't find out that he's the Thinker until like episode 8 or
and
7.
I thought
actually,
that was very cool because they were able to buck that formula that they've done, which I haven't minded the formula, but it was cool to see something.
Oh better. Yeah.
But they were able to do that while still giving us a different mystery with the mystery girl.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I have a very interesting theory about the mystery girl, which I'll share when we get to that.
Okay.
She's actually plastique. That's my theory.
What?
She's actually – Brandon, you won't get this, but I think Adam might. She's actually plastique.
Isn't that what she played on Smallville?
Yeah, that's who she played.
No, she's not plastique. Plastique was already done on the Flash.
I know. I know she was in season 1.
Yeah, he's just making – he's just making
– reference.
Yeah, he's just making another Smallville reference. One of the other things I really liked on this season was the Caitlin Snow Killer Frost angle.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing. I loved it. I love the reveal too. I love the fact that they're introducing her, the fact that she's been a meta forever.
Right.
That blew my mind, dude. It makes me think,
what if she's actually from another Earth? Or maybe her dad has been doing experiments on her since she was a kid and she just doesn't remember. Like, that's super interesting.
I can't wait to find out what they reveal with that next season. Because that, as soon as they reveal that, I was like, I literally like audibly gasped. I was like, oh my goodness, that is nuts.
Yeah.
Because like, I mean, we've seen metas who haven't been part, and I think this was something that they were talking about maybe on, I think it was on DCTV Squadcast that they brought this up, that we have seen metas that weren't part of the Accelerator on Earth 1 in the Arrowverse. But they're few and far between.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. The only ones I can think about is now Caitlin,
uh-huh.
Blackout.
Right.
And I think that's about it.
Yeah.
The JSA.
That I know. Who?
The JSA.
The JSA. Well, remember, that's not, but they're metas, but most of them have like magic abilities. They're not like meta.
Yeah.
Some of them are straight up metas, though.
Which one?
Like, I'm trying to think who. Well, now I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, because Hawkman and Hawkgirl metas. Liberty Bell, magic, I believe, or has some power.
Liberty Bell? She wasn't on the JSA in the Arrowverse.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, they showed her briefly.
Yeah, what? She's there. She's the one that ends up going to the time of King Arthur.
No, that's Stargirl.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the one I mean. That's the one I mean. I'm sorry. I got confused. I'm talking about Stargirl.
Liberty Bell is Jesse Quick's other alter ego in the comics.
Right. So you have that. You have...
Well, Stargirl's got the staff, so I guess she's not really
a meta. Right. And then Our Man, we didn't see any of. But we know he has the pill. So,
yeah, good.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I love the fact that, like you guys said, the reveal that she's been a metahuman since she was a child.
But also the
Incredible Hulk angle on how she comes out.
That was just hilarious.
That was genius.
Especially when they go like, Lucy Ray Rudolph. And she like what? Oh, that was her bully when she was.
that was
hilarious.
And then when she says, "Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry." That was funny.
They've been doing a lot of Marvel references in the Arrowverse recently.
No, and not just Marvel. They're doing a lot of like they've gone full on to like locate these shows in the real world. That makes it a lot more enjoyable.
Well, it's interesting to me because the way I take it, based on all the references they made specifically to Marvel, is that I think the Marvel characters are their fictional superheroes in the Arrowverse, right. Which is so cool. Like, I think they even referenced that Spider-Man 2 is a movie in the Arrowverse.
Yeah.
No, they even Barry in a scene when Barry, when he's like starting to obsess with DeVoe on episode 7, he literally says, my spider sense are tingling. Yeah. Like, he literally says that.
Yeah.
So guys,
that's really cool.
So guys, I wanted to share a couple of things with you guys that I have. Like, I make like little crazy notes. It is the happiest Flash we've seen ever.
Yeah.
Which for me is a huge relief. In the sense that when he came out of the Speed Force, he feels. You know how when you watch Arrow, it wasn't until like probably season 5-ish or the beginning of season 6. You don't see a lot of that happy Oliver Queen that we know. It's very typical Green Arrow, but you start to see more glimpses of that now. And now they're saying they're going to bring the goatee to season 7. And
I would say you saw an Arrow in season 4 when he was with Felicity at the beginning
And you're right. But that, I don't count that because he was an Arrow.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Does that make sense?
It wasn't Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Right. But for example, you see the Flash with that creepiness, with that optimism, with that ray of hope. And I think that's one of the things that I loved about the season. Like, for me, this season is not the best, but it has some of my favorite moments of the whole series. Because they've made it a point to put this Flash now a lot more closer to the Flash that we know and love from the comics. Like, it's getting a lot closer to the Barry Allen of the comics, which I truly, truly, truly enjoy.
I never minded how Barry was in the previous seasons, but I did think that was cool that he sort of had a, once he came out of the Speed Force and, you know, once he got his mind back together and all, he had a new outlook on things. So I thought that was cool.
And that's the thing. I don't have a problem with the previous seasons. I just find it refreshing. And I'm like, oh, yes, I want more of this. Yeah, you know what I mean?
His darkest was season 3. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I make a point of this is because, and I actually wrote it on one of my pieces on Resident Fans, is because for me, Barry is the optimist of the just, apart from Superman, because Superman's like a symbol of hope and everything like that. But Barry Allen is that hopeful, optimist spirit that keeps everyone afloat. Yeah. Like, he's the one that's always thinking, we're going to get through this. He's the one that pushes everyone to keep moving forward. He is that ray of hope.
And you saw saw that in Justice League,
Exactly. And like, for example, I always like to point a fact, which is, it's a very random fact, but I just find it so amusing, is like, he was the only one that was chosen to be a Blue Lantern, which is like the epitome of hope. Yeah. I used to find that so amazing, like, for a while. So, like, you saw a lot more of that comic book Flash, and I love that.
Gordon's been a Blue Lantern before in the Smallville Season 11 comics.
Okay, but those don't count.
No, see, I didn't know that. That's a cool tidbit. One of the things that I love, the suit looks so beautiful. I'm so glad there's a lot more. And I like the fact that it has a lot of features of my favorite suit. And just so you know, my favorite Flash suit is New 52.
Yeah.
When Flash's suit, when it like inflated, that cracked me up so much.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they used like that's from the old comic. That was super hilarious.
Well, it's a nod from the comics, yeah.
Yep. And they did a lot of nod, like actual frames. Like the one with the samurai, that's a frame from the comics. But I love the fact that the suit has a lot more lightning on it, like visible lightning. There's a lot less red. There's a lot more design features. Like, it's not a plain suit like it's been for the last 2.5 seasons. Like, in the first 3 seasons, all they did was pretty much change the tone of it, like, and make it a more brighter red. Like, on this one, they made it a brighter red and added a lot more lightning to it and looks.
They changed the chest plate, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now
we can see the abs through the suit.
I'm talking about the lightning bolt. They changed it from red to white back, I think, in season
2. Oh, yeah, that's been like that since season 2.
Yeah.
In season two, yeah.
Yeah, that's been like that's season two.
Yeah, I was gonna change that before.
What I'm looking forward to in season five, I don't know if we're going to start fantasizing about that, but I think in season five it would be a great thing for the fans if we see the Flash ring.
That'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I can't wait to see that.
So he doesn't have to keep going to that compartment and exactly.
So I love the fact that we see a lot more of the Happy Flash, and the fact that we see that ray of hope aspect of him really be explored. Yeah. Because that's one of the big things, especially as he's training Ralph, and then Iris, the conversation she said. I know you hate her, Adam, but I got to bring her into the conversation.
I can't say I'll get to that. Yeah.
So the fact that how that in particular, I one of my favorite also things. Do you guys have a favorite episode? I do.
I do. Yep.
What's your favorite episode, Adam?
My favorite is Enter Flash from this season. We're talking about, right?
Yeah.
This season? Enter Flash time.
Yeah, that would be my
Oh, man. I hated that episode.
What?
Yes.
But,
do you know
why? But I did love the finale as well, so I will say that, yeah.
No. Do you know why?
Okay, we got to talk about it. Tell me why you hated it, and then I got to explain why I loved it.
I enjoy the concept behind it and what they introduced. I love the concept.
Uh-huh.
But the solution was way too Deus Ex Machina. Like, it was really, like, out of nowhere. Okay, let's just get the quirk and just finish it. Like, it didn't feel like a solution it felt too, like, underhanded, like a magic trick. It didn't feel like a solution. Like, they had to solve it for the episode, so they just solved it. To me, it felt like that writing. And not only that, the final scene, to me, was horrible. The CGI where you see him like running in the city in slow motion, it just looked bad. And like, if I'm gonna see the Flash running in CG, why am I seeing him in slow motion? Like, you don't have to show the Flash in slow motion to make it dramatic. Just put him running from a greater distance. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it just didn't make sense. It's mostly just visual standpoint. Like, I love the concept, and I adore how they explore the concept beyond the episode. But I don't know. I have storytelling issues with that episode. That's why I kind of didn't like it more than anything.
Yeah, okay. I like just anytime we get Jay Garrick on the show is you know, that's some of my favorite.
Oh, no. And so, I agree with you on that. I like Jay Garrick's episode.
And Jesse, we got three.
Yeah,
we got
Jesse's
three for
Timo. Jesse's pretty cool. I will say.
I like her. I just loved. I'll say, Brandon. Neither of those complaints really. Neither of them even occurred to me. I got to be honest. Watching the episode, like those didn't come to mind for me. Like I just didn't even think about those things. Okay. I mean, I'd have to rewatch the episode and see if those bothered me on second viewing. But they certainly didn't when I was watching the episode. Yeah. I loved the intense of the episode, like the suspense of it, many amazing performances from the actors. Like you start out in Meteor Res and Barry's there, and he's like, you see he's so tired, he's exhausted, he's talking to Iris, he's like, I can't do this anymore. And then you get back and you find out what's been happening, and just the whole concept of an episode taking place in like what, 10 seconds, and just
Yeah,
I think that was so cool as a concept for a Flash. I mean, I know you like the concept too.
Yep.
I love that, and just the intense performances from everybody. But there was this really emotional, so many emotional beats. There was one with Killer Frost where she tells Barry she wants him to make sure Caitlin's okay, and that's really where you start to see them start to bond, Killer Frost and Caitlin. And then, like, the end scene between Harry and Jesse, I mean, that was so emotional.
I love those things, and I love the episode. I love for the concept they introduced. Mm-hmm. I think maybe I'm just being too critical because of the execution, but I agree with you on those things 100%.
Okay, cool.
And just because you brought it up, Jordan, about the part about Caitlin and Killer Frost, that's another thing that I didn't mention is that I love the fact that each version of each character within Caitlyn started caring about the other. And you know,
yeah.
The fact okay. that they kind of missed each other.
Right.
And the way our Caitlyn missed Gunnar Frost, and the way Danielle Panabaker was able to play that, I thought was she had some brilliant acting this season. And actually she was one of my standout performers on the entire season.
Yeah, she's like an MVP.
For sure.
Harrison Tom Cameron is always amazing.
So. Always, yeah.
Yeah,
I love.
And that's the Council
of Wells. Can we talk about the Council of
Wells? I'm glad you brought that up because there were points in time throughout the season where I thought they were overcompensating with the comedy because last season was too dark, for most people. So I thought in some cases they overcompensated.
You see, I never got that complaint. We had freaking HR last season. He was hilarious.
But I did like the Council of Walls was great stuff. And also,
oh my God.
Watching.
Who was your favorite? Who was your favorite?
Hugh Hefner Wells.
Yeah, I was thinking
that. That, and I liked the Mad Max one, too. He was cool.
Oh, that was pretty cool.
But watching him, like, sort of struggle with his mind basically degenerating, right?
Yeah.
Was very powerful because he tied in his usefulness to the team with his intelligence.
Right.
What I was going to bring up earlier, he had sort of the reverse arc of the thinker, where the thinker loses his perspective on emotions and the importance of them.
Yep.
And Harrison realizes that he starts out, you know, he's like the very cold, like he's all about like facts and science, and he doesn't have time for his daughter. And then he really he sort of changes. And like at the end of the season, when Cisco can't get him back all of his intelligence, and he's like, no, that's okay. I needed more of a balance in my life, and I need emotion. But I want to bring up the other Wells. I loved Harrison Wolfgang Wells. I loved him. He was hilarious. And I also loved the one that sounded like, to me, he reminded me of Joe Pesci from Goodfellas.
Yeah.
That Wells.
Yeah.
I loved him too.
But I love the transition about somebody who was all about his work, all about his intelligence, and then he became he thought of them as a family by the end, but also realized the importance of being with his daughter and telling his daughter how much he liked her. So it was a very strong character arc from Tom Cavanaugh and Harrison Wells this season.
Do you guys want to hear what my favorite episode was?
You were going to say that.
And it might surprise you. Episode 10, The Trial of the Flash.
Okay.
Okay.
The main reason is because it's the one that first introduces the idea of Flash time. That's one.
It set your favorite episode sets up my favorite episode.
Now the reason why I love it more than anything is because of that final monologue where you have Captain Singh giving the Flash an award. And you have the judge sentencing Barry for life.
Yeah.
And you have those two contrasting ideas of how Barry's going to prison because he was framed by the thinker, even though nobody knows it. But then you have this idea more clear than it's been in a long time because they made it a big deal to make like Flash Day in season two. And then they kind of forgot all that in season two and three. But, like, they made it a big deal, the fact that Central City stands behind this hero, which is a president for the Flash Museum. Actually, he's going to come up in a couple of years. So,
that final speech gave me a little bit of a Dark Knight vibe.
Right.
End of the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
It gave me a little bit of a vibe of that.
But you know what's funny about it? It gives you that Dark Knight vibe, but with that bright hope that the Flash represents.
Yeah.
So is that style of monologue. So when I saw that those two things. And, like, he just sacrificed himself pretty much, almost died trying to save the city. And
well,
now
hey, you're not trying to suggest that Batman doesn't represent hope, too, are you? Because he made a sacrifice,
to say,
too.
Yeah, no. What I'm trying to say is that that is not the idea that he mostly is known by. Not that he doesn't represent hope, because he does. He is the he's the hero that Gotham needs, not the one he deserves. So he's the only hope that Gotham has. But what I mean
no,
is...
No, he's the hero that Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now. Huh. Other way around.
It's the other way around?
Yeah.
Screw up the best line, why don't you, Jordan? You're terrible. How can you screw up that line?
He's the one... Wait, I'm not the one who screwed it up. I'm correcting the line.
Well, why did you screw up that line, and shame on whichever one of you it was.
I'm correct... Oh, my... Why am I always the scapegoat here?
Because
I was correcting the line, and now I'm getting...
Here's the reason. He's the guest. You're the co-host, so the default is the yellow you.
I apologize. I apologize for my lack of knowledge.
Oh, shame on you, Brandon.
I need to put my thinking cap.
I don't know if that was supposed to be a reference to the episode Q&A from the animated series The Batman, but I'm going to take it as one where the show that Cluemaster participates in, the slogan is, put on your thinking caps.
So that idea of seeing that love of the city for the Flash, it just fills my heart with all the right emotions. Because one of the big things of the Flash's history is the love that the city has for its hero. Like, very few heroes, apart from Superman's the world's hero, like, that's one of the big things of the Flash story.
Yeah.
The fact that the Central City loves their hero, they celebrate it, and that they're bringing that to the forefront. And we all know from that first journey into time travel in season one that you have that image of the Flash Museum. So we know that's coming. So that the fact that that's being promoted in that way in that episode, to me, was just like, it was just perfect. Like, that episode was just perfect beyond belief. And how you see the Flash knowing, of course, not only that, this is a big tribute to a classic Flash storyline, which is the trial of the Flash, which is the trial that Barry Allen faces when he actually breaks the Reverse Flash's neck and he's accused of murder. And he actually, I think if I remember,
so he pulls the mask off.
Right. He pulled him out of steel. So but in this one, he is actually innocent, and he chooses. And just the idea of the previous episode where he says, "Don't run." Like, for example, that mid-season finale was amazing as well.
Yeah.
So the Trial of Flash was an amazing follow-up. Now, do you guys want to hear my theory about Nora?
Hold up. Do either of you guys think it's a little bit of a funny coincidence that both Barry and Oliver were on trial this season?
No.
Now,
you know what's interesting, though, also, now that you mentioned that, it makes me think. If you guys notice, for some reason, part of me, I mean, this is probably not real, of course, because we all know that all these CW shows happen in the same time frame up to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But it made me think, at one point that, I don't know if you noticed, there's a scene in the, I think it's episode 4 or something like that, where when Iris and Barry start going to therapy.
Uh-huh. Oh, actually, that therapist, Dr. Finkel, she was so funny.
Yes, she is. I started with her. So she actually has a newspaper, and it says, Oliver Queen is the Green Arrow. And the way that headline goes makes me think, wait a minute, is this happening at the end of season 6? Or is this happening just because they're making a big headline out of the trial? So it kind of confused me. It was a very interesting tidbit, not just me thinking out loud.
I think it was just because of the trial.
Yeah.
Right.
But
so,
the thing I was going to say to you, Brandon, is just to bring it up, my favorite example of seeing, and I know it's Wally West Flash, not Barry Allen Flash, but technically in this continuity I'm about to bring up, he was operating in Central City, even though he was Wally, which is the episode Flash and Substance from Justice League Unlimited. That's my favorite example of seeing, you know, Flash's relationship with the city.
Yeah.
I love that episode so much.
Yeah. You know what I actually what I liked about the whole trial and him getting arrested and thrown in Iron Heights was the friendship he sparked with
Big Sur,
yes.
To me, he'll be Goldberg. I don't care what they call him on the show; it's always Goldberg.
Yep. No, the whole stay at the prison.
Yeah.
I think was awesome. The fact that he ended up in his dad's cell, like, oh, those are little nudges to my heart. I'm like, oh man, this is just so good.
So good.
And they pull out that.
They pull at the heartstrings because the connection with the father.
Yep.
So I like that, and because.
And I liked how Big Sur. I liked the relationship he had with Henry, and how that I liked the connection there, and you know that, and then he had a connection with Barry. I thought that was great. Yeah. And the episode where Barry tries to get him out of there, and I loved how things didn't go like it. It wasn't exactly, you know, the storybook ending. Like at first, flat Barry fails to do it, and then I love that he still was able to do it though, and he still gave Goldberg what he deserved, and he got him out of there, and he ran him. Where did he run him over to? It was like China, I think.
Japan or China. Yep.
And then I remember on Legends of Tomorrow when Wally and Rip were there, I remember thinking, hey, are they going to see Big Sur over there?
That would have been funny.
But
I like that because I thought, okay, we know the Flash isn't going to be in jail for any lengthy period of time. So what can you do in here that's going to make this aspect of the story gripping and compelling? And they managed to do that well. Another character before we talk about Coffee Shop Girl, and then we'll go into our dislikes because I have some. But before we talk about Coffee Shop Girl, I do want to mention Aminette Black because she's part of my likes but also my dislikes. She's part of my likes because I love Katie Sackhoff. I'm a huge fan of.
She was amazing.
I'm a huge fan of the Battlestar Galactica, the reboot series, and I love Katie Sackhoff, and I enjoyed her. Again, her relationship with Caitlin was interesting, but very
Katie. Unique.
Yeah, and the fact that she there's that episode where she does, to suit her own needs, help out Team Flash.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of it. The one issue I had with Katie Sackhoff's performance was that god-awful English accent.
What?
I thought it was.
I thought it was so entertaining.
I thought it was overdone. It was scenery chewing, that accent.
I just thought it. I'll tell you. I know I was gonna say this for my negatives. I'll tell you somebody who was scenery chewing, and I know it was a cool nod to the '90s Flash series. But bringing in Prank, she was over the top.
I hated her too.
This does not work.
I enjoyed that episode because of how they put Elongated Man front and center.
I like the episode overall, but I love the title of that episode, The Elongated Night Rises, because The Dark Knight Rises is my favorite live action movie. So to put that as a title, I thought that was awesome.
Yep.
But I thought she was too much for me. Aminette Black though, I just found so entertaining. She had so much personality. I just loved her. Yeah. I just loved.
No, I loved Aminette Black, and when it comes to Prank, I enjoyed it because to me it was an artistic choice. It was something that was done like that on purpose. I get where you guys are coming from where it felt over the top, but personally I enjoyed it because it was done on purpose. It's just like when they brought back Mark Hamill as a trickster. He is like that because he's playing that character that way on purpose.
I liked Mark Hamill's performance. To me, Flash does a really good job. They do some silly stuff, but usually, like 99% of the time, I think that they balance it perfectly. I just felt like they went a little too far over the top with with Prank. But and okay. Again, I appreciate that they brought back the actress from the 90s series. I appreciate that as a nod. That was cool. But it just didn't – it was just for this series and really for the 90s series too. But particularly for this series, just it was too over the top for me. But
that's fair.
I have a very interesting relationship with Ralph Dibny, the Elongated Man, because I like the actor.
Did he remind you a little bit of Jim Carrey?
Yes,
he did to me.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He was Jim Carrey light. Diet Jim Carrey. But I like the actor. I love his performance. I really love the character arc.
Yeah, me too.
He went through.
Me too.
My one problem is his character may have been called Ralph Dibny in The Elongated Man, but it was actually what's the other stretchy dude?
Plastic Man?
Yes. No,
to me, it was – you see, you're right. You're partially right, I think.
No, it's I'm right, because he was a crooked cop. He's a crooked – his background was he was a crooked cop, correct?
Plastic Man was not a cop. He was just a straight-up criminal.
Right, but he was a criminal. But so a crooked
my thing
criminal,
is yeah. – But he still retained a lot of elements of Elongated Man too, because Elongated Man was a detective, which Ralph Dibny on the show was.
Oh, wow! Thanks. They kept that, but everything else.
And
was freaking
he did the nose thing that Ralph did that Elongated Man did in the comics. You know, the nose twitching thing, and he also what was the other thing that I was going to say that he the Gin Gold. They also incorporated Gin Gold a couple times. Which is the stuff that he drinks in the comics to be able to, you know, do his powers or whatever. So it's an amalgamation of the two, and I didn't mind that at all. Like, it's okay to me if they do an amalgamation of two characters. Tim Drake on the new Batman Adventures was, the DCAU as a whole, because technically he showed up in Batman Mystery of the Batwoman and Batman Beyond Return of the Joker as well. Technically Batman Mystery of the Batwoman is in the new Batman Adventure style, whatever. I'm getting way too much into logistics here. But Tim Drake on the new Batman Adventures was an amalgamation of Jason and Tim. So I have no problem with The Flash making their version of Elongated Man an amalgamation of Elongated Man and Plastic Man from the comics. You're right that he retained a lot of elements of Plastic Man, but that doesn't mean he was just Plastic Man with Elongated Man's name only. He had elements of both.
For me, like I said, it's an issue, but it's not something that overly detracts. Like I like three quarters of his performance and his character. I liked more than I didn't like. I'm just pointing it out that it irked me a little bit. Again, not enough to detract from
your right.
But it did irk me.
You see,
that's very common on the Arrowverse, because you got to think about, for example, we all knew that there was a time where Brandon Routh was going to be Blue Beetle, and then they couldn't use Blue Beetle, so they made him the Atom.
And now they're actually going to,
they're going to bring Blue Beetle now.
The theory is that we're getting Blue Beetle. So
right. So it makes sense that it feels that way, because a lot of times, who knows, maybe they might have been Plastic Man and they told them no.
I loved that he had a lot of. I don't think the plan was originally for them to do Plastic Man, because Elongated Man in the comics has heavy ties to the Flash. So I think it makes sense that they would have gone with Elongated Man from the start. But I like that he had some Plastic Man's personality, though, because the thing I said as soon as he was introduced was that he was bringing the humor to the show that I wanted to get from Wally got from Wally. So I didn't get the humor I wanted from Wally till he went over to Legend.
I kind of felt that I miss Kid Flash a lot. Like, since season 3, I've seen, like, we finally got him, and then he's not.
To be honest with you, I know everybody's broken up that he's gone. I never gravitated to him, personally, this iteration of him. So the fact that he's gone doesn't really...
Yeah.
Sadden me at all.
It's like, okay, whatever.
I thought they did a much better job with him on Legends. My biggest problem was with the Flash. The way he was on the Flash, it was just like they made him this sort of like arrogant daredevil at first. And to me, it was like my favorite versions of Wally are the versions from the DCAU and the version from Young Justice, where he's a very he's the comic relief. He's like super laid back, super chill. He's just always cracking jokes and stuff. And I just didn't get that from this quality. And like, I get that they went in a different direction with the character, but it's just it's not my preferred take on Wally. And so I never disliked him, but it wasn't
when he wasn't there. It's not like I missed him. Like I didn't.
I think that has to do a lot. That has to do a lot with how he was written.
Oh sure.
Because
sure.
if you look at Wally in season 2 and 3, he was used as a plot device.
Yeah.
He wasn't really used as, hey, there's a new character going to be a member of this team.
Yeah,
like, he was mostly used to move the story forward more than anything.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't established, like, this is going to be a main character and we're going to see him grow. Like, we saw him grow, but it wasn't like, for example, it's like when we saw Caitlin grow this season, which was amazing. But, and we've been with her already 4 years, but we still saw her grow in different dimensions as we saw Iris and all the others. Like, right, Rob Dibney, I get what you guys are saying. Because, and it makes sense, because, like, for example, you can't have the Flash. It doesn't make sense having Kid Flash and Ralph Disney both learning at the same time. Might as well focus on one and do him well, which they did, which I appreciate. And especially because he doesn't have the same powers as Barry. So it shows how Barry has grown as a hero more than a speedster.
Yeah, that's,
truly
yeah, that's true.
Speaking of Ralph Disney, I wanted to bring up in particular one episode where the humor really I just absolutely loved, which was the episode Girls Night Out, which I think I loved that episode. First of all, I think the title might have been a nod because there's an episode of the new Batman Adventures called Girls Night Out. So I think it might have been a nod to that. That's the episode where Supergirl and Batgirl team up against Poison Ivy and Harley and Livewire, and I just love that episode. And this episode of The Flash was, if that was intentional, it was certainly a worthy episode to have taken inspiration from that great episode of the new Batman Avengers. First of all, it's another example of another mini crossover, because we had Felicity in that episode, which was awesome.
Right.
But then the whole strip club scene where Barry gets drunk and he's yelling, "I'm The Flash!" Oh my
God. Yeah, that was awesome. One of the best scenes was this. Barry, what'd you do? I went to grab peanuts from bar. And you see him going, whoosh. And then he's crying like, I love wings so much.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That episode was hilarious. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
But let's get into the most interesting parts of the season.
Hold on, before we get to Mystery Girl, you're going with Mystery Girl?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to bring up Breacher real quick.
Because
he was another, his second episode was good too, but especially his first episode when he showed up and he was chasing Cisco everywhere. Goodness, that was so funny.
I like that he calls him Siski. That was funny.
Yes. I mean, Danny Trejo, he was just so, he's scary, but he's funny at the same time. Like, it's just,
you know, he could have also played Lobo on one of these shows.
I heard as soon as that Lobo movie got reported on, I heard a lot of people fan casting him as Lobo, and I was like, that would be perfect. He would be
I'd do it. Yeah, I would watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The main man.
Yeah, no, he was great. He was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Mystery Girl. I like the way they peppered her in, you know, throughout just a few episodes, but they give you enough of a she was always like the end tag, right? The end credit tag.
Yeah. Except for the wedding episode.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she's mostly there like an end tag thing.
So
I basically figured, you know, I don't think they never intended to really mask who she. I mean, they gave you enough clues that if you were paying attention, you knew who she was.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to be oblivious, and just watching on a surface level and not like, if you let's say are watching as a sort of a I'll call you a normie, and you've never read a comic book, or you never, you know, you don't know the history of the Flash.
Who do you think she is?
Well, they said who she is. She's.
Well, Nora is not Barry's daughter in the comics.
No, but you knew that she was the daughter.
Right, but in my opinion, she's another example of an amalgam. So she kind of is an original character.
Right. No. They're making a change, but like they're altering the comics. But
yeah,
just from the clues they gave you.
Oh yeah. You know she is related to that family.
Yeah, exactly.
I got you.
Unless you're oblivious and are just watching superficially, then you can get it. But for fans in the know, more in the know about the source material, you could piece together that, okay, that's the daughter.
Right.
What was interesting about the Mystery Girl was that the way she looked at characters like Caitlin.
That
animosity that she viewed her
with. That was awesome.
And even she had animosity, like even the way she looked at her mother, which we later found out was her mother, was interesting. Because I had the same look towards Iris the whole season. I gave her the cross-eyed look, but for a totally different reason. But I think that comes down to whatever timeline she's from. Killer Frost has become a full-fledged adversary.
Right.
And that's what I.
That makes sense. What I
picture from that. And the reveal was really cool. The fact that you saw a piece of her arm, and so in the end she was helping her father.
Yeah.
We would find about her
father.
But that reveal, I think, is going to lead us into season 5, and that brings a lot of interesting plot scenarios going forward.
I can't wait to find out what the mistake she's referring to is. I'm so excited to find out.
That was a great tag at the end. That was just
and it's kind of like father like daughter, right? Because he went
right in time, right,
screw things up, and now she's probably going to do this, you know, she's going to do the same thing, or is going to do the same thing.
She didn't listen. She must not have listened to Barry at some point. He was like,
yeah, she probably took him once and screwed it.
Now here's the most interesting thing about it. The reason why she's so excited to see Barry is because I believe that this version of Nora never met her father or never really spent time with him. Because remember, according to the newspaper, Barry disappears on 2024.
But why would she have such, okay, if that's the case, why would she have such resentment, at least visually, towards her mother?
Probably because she was overprotective. Look how she was without Barry at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, good point. Fair enough.
But here's something you can think about it. The reason what I love more about this character is who I think they're going to make her, and I'm really excited if they do that.
And who's that?
I think she's Impulse. I think she is an amalgam. She's an original character because she's going to be a female version of Bart. We're not going to have Bart Allen in this show. I believe that if you see her personality, her intelligence.
Yeah, it is. Very
I can
much
see
like
it.
Bart.
Yeah.
It's Bart Allen. It's Bart Allen.
That's a good call.
I think she's going to be our Impulse. And not only that, when you analyze logistically the production, remember, the Flash no longer has Jesse Quick anymore. She's going to be a regular in a different show. So we don't have a female speedster anymore. So it makes sense to hire a different female speedster, and why not make her Impulse? Especially now we don't have one.
Right, so instead of being the granddaughter, she'll be, or the grandson, she'll be the dog. Okay, that's, yeah.
Yeah. And
are you all for that? You're totally right. A lot of her mannerisms feel similar to what we'd expect.
Yeah.
From
Bart.
Now that you said that, looking back, I can definitely see some Bart in her. Yeah.
It reminds me of Bart's first appearance in Young Justice when he's like running around hugging everybody. He Iris is pregnant and he like hugs her and then he waves at like she doesn't know she's pregnant yet and he like waves at he's like hi mom, hi dad.
No, and the most awesome thing is who else but Bart Allen would say, this house is bitching?
Yeah.
that's true, yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, and that's the coolest thing about it, because one of the biggest characteristics in any version of that I've seen of Bart, especially when he arrives, is that he has the spirit of someone that's on vacation.
Yeah.
Someone that's traveling to a different place and just looking, sightseeing. That's what she's been doing all the time.
She better say that so Crash at some point.
Yeah. Like it's interesting. And the funny thing is, and then when you look at all this, it's like, and that's why I think that she comes from a timeline where Barry's not around, because when she actually sees him for the first time in the wedding, he's like completely dreamy eyed. Like, oh my God, it's that. You know what I mean? And
yeah, good call.
And the biggest thing about it is she probably grew up hearing about Cisco, hearing about Harrison, hearing about all these people. So she feels like she's interacting with her heroes.
Yeah.
As opposed to
sort of like what you see with the Legion of Superheroes sometimes when they come back and they're,
Yeah. That's a big thing on Supergirl. Yeah, you're right. That like, we heard all about you. Like we've seen, like we are heroes because Mon-El told us the stories of the great things you've done and all those cool things. Yeah. So yeah, that actually has me very excited because it's a different take on the character. And the biggest thing is, if I'm not mistaken, which sadly my comic knowledge doesn't go there, so I'm going to rely on you guys. When Impulse comes back, it's because he's trying to fix something that happened in the future. Or trying to fix something that prevents apart from sightseeing, right? There's something. So that's why I think that she's going to be our version of Impulse.
Yeah.
So,
and I can't see it.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about it also is, did you notice what they did with the lightning?
It's purple.
No, it's not. It's purple and yellow.
That's right. Yeah.
Because like Barry and Iris's when Iris had her lightning
in
Run Iris Run. Exactly. Yeah.
That was like the biggest shout out. Like when you see the purple and yellow lightning, okay, she's Barry and Iris's daughter.
And I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool that she was wearing Iris's suit too.
The jacket arm. Yes. When you see the arm, you see the jacket, right?
Yes.
And my first thought was, oh God, I hope that's not Iris. Or if it is, I hope she dies in a blaze of fire, not glory. But now I'm gonna get to my two.
Hold up, I got one more positive.
And I got something else too. And I have another fan fantasization I would like to share with you guys.
Okay.
Well, I just say my positive is real quick, but I'll just say another mini crossover, sorta kinda. That I love. Well, actually, you know what? I got two things that are sort of related because they're the same episode, which is Siren X. I loved seeing sort of a mini crossover. Seeing her. What's that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Yeah, you're good. I couldn't figure out if you're trying to say something.
No. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I just thought that was so cool to see Katie Cassidy on The Flash again. Obviously, we saw her a lot on The Flash at the end of season 2 when she was playing Earth 2 Laurel. But seeing her again playing basically the third version of Laurel now that we've seen her play, that was really cool. And then that same episode, seeing Leo Snart in, I think, Wentworth Miller's final performance in the Arrowverse, at least for now.
For now.
Which is kind of unfortunate, but like he had a really nice send off. But seeing him interact with Team Flash, that was really cool.
I think before it's all said and done, he'll come back.
Yeah. In my thing, I don't know. I had mixed feelings about the whole. The only thing we see of him is him being a hero. I got a couple of reservations with that, but that's a different podcast.
Okay, but. Well, you know what? Why don't we save your last bit of speculation till the end?
Cool.
Before we do our rating, and then we'll go right into our rating after we hear your epic theory.
Awesome.
But two negatives that I have to bring up that really, to me, drag the season down from being better than it could have been for me are, one, the fact – I didn't like the fact that Joe's fiance, whatever, Cecile, what is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that she had pregnancy powers. The whole thing feels like an Oprah episode of the Oprah show where instead of giving away cars – The writers on the show are, you get a power, you get a power.
Are you sure that you just don't, are you sure it's not the fact that you just hate babies?
No, I love babies. I have six nephews and nieces. I love each of them dearly. And the only time I shoo them away is when they're crap in their diapers. But no, to me, it's there's no need for that, and it's for the sake of, let's give the actress more to do because we have no other real story for her.
It made for so many funny moments though of her learning.
Yeah, but there was so much funny already. There was Dibney. There was what's the Danny Trejo's character. Or Trejo, I don't know how you probably don't pronounce it that right.
Yeah, I think it's Trejo.
I didn't think it was necessary.
Yeah. To me, it wasn't necessary. And it was just this extra piece of thing. It was just there because, again, it's let's give this actress more to do because we really have, other than her being pregnant, nothing for her to do.
Right. But it tied in very heavily to the finale, though. They used it.
Because it was, but if they didn't have that, they could have come up with another plot point. To handle that scenario, the reason they used her was a thing of convenience.
Right. And that's the thing, Jordan. I think I understand what he's trying to say, and I'm not trying to gang up on you, bro. I love you, man.
No, you're good. You're good, man. You're good.
Yeah, okay. What I think he's trying to say is the fact that, like, if you're gonna do something like that, they just took way too long to pay it off. Like, they made it pay off at the end, and it was like, okay.
Yeah, the rest of it was all played for laughs. And again, I got no problem with the Flash being lighter and humorous, but I think that was part of their overcompensating for season three being what many perceive to be too dark.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem that the show had in general is the fact that I think that more than any season, the reason why I know we're not going to get into ratings yet, but the reason why I can't put this like one of the top seasons, it's because I think this is the season that most suffered from too long of a story arc for the whole thing. I think they need to start thinking about smaller arcs instead of just doing a whole.
Like they did in the first two seasons, where the reveal of the villain was about at the halfway point, right?
That was an arc. That was an arc in and of itself.
But yeah, and I think it worked out better because.
Right.
They could sparse things out and be more effective with certain storylines. The other issue I have, and this is going to come as no secret to anybody who follows me on social media or what have you.
Can I guess it?
Yeah, go ahead. Take a guess, and if you win, you get the grand prize of still being Mario's cousin. Go ahead.
We are the Flash.
Oh, like the whole Iris thing in general. Look. And this is not, I want to rephrase, because somebody accused me of being a misogynist and anti.
Why would we say that?
Before anybody writes that down anywhere, either in our comment section or on social media, I'd like to point out a couple things. First of all, Sarah Lance is my favorite, one of my favorite Arrowverse characters. Okay?
Right.
And guess what? She's female, and she's a kick-ass female.
Yes, she is.
Okay? Wonder Woman is my favorite DCEU movie.
Yep.
Featuring, guess what? Wonder Woman's a woman. So, if I was a misogynist and anti-feminist, I would not choose Wonder Woman as my top movie.
Right.
I love, Katie Cassidy as... Black Siren. I even like, even though I think, you know, Arrow has massacred the Black Canary character overall in the different versions, in all that crap that they have going on. I in spite of saying that, I even like Juliana Harkavy's version of Dinah Drake.
Oh, so yeah.
This is not an anti-female having a super, you know, a big role in a superhero show. It's got nothing to do with that. In fact, if you go back, if you go on Revenge of the Fans, here's a shameless plug, and read my retrospective review of season one, and as you'll see in season two, when I finish writing that and I eventually post it, I was very, and Brandon can attest to this because he's read my season one retrospective. I was very complimentary both to Candace Patton and Iris West.
Yeah.
Was I not?
No, Candace, yeah.
So here's where my issue comes in, okay? I don't even care that she said we're the fly. Like, to me, that's just a, you could use that as a motivational tool, whatever. You can write that off as motivational speak, right? She's Tony Robbins, but female. It's great. But my issue is basically she became the de facto team leader to the point where she is laying out strategy for missions. Okay.
Right.
Now here's the problem. She's not John Diggle. She does not have military training.
Right.
She is not a scientist, so she doesn't know the ins and outs of these powers that all these people have.
Right.
She started off as a coffee. She a barista, okay. She then worked her way up to, in one season, from barista to blogger, and then in season two, she magically started working for a newspaper. I mean, that's an even worse transition than Clark magically showing up at the Daily Planet and saying, "Here, look, give me a job." When he took one class coached by an alien, but at least he worked at the Torch in high school, so he had that going for him.
Right.
He had some quote unquote professional training, but so she ends up as a reporter, and all of a sudden, I'm de facto leader of Team Flash. And again, the thing that bugs me is that as she's organizing missions and plans, and she's telling Caitlin where to go and Cisco what to do, and she's even ordering around Wells, who's got an IQ the size of God almost. To me, it doesn't compute. It doesn't don't look like the only reason, and this is what it looks like, and it's probably because it is the only reason Iris has that position is because A, she's married to Barry Allen,
right,
and B, because she's Joe West's daughter.
Right.
And the other problem that bothered me was the episode where they gave her the Flash's powers, because we've seen that done twice on Smallville already.
Well, okay. I got a lot to say. Keep going. I want you to finish your rant.
You're regurgitating plot lines.
Okay.
And even her with powers,
right,
showed how ineffective she is. So here's my thing.
Right.
This character is still, like I said, Candace Patton's a good actress.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not blaming her. It's the material that was written for her. This character is still redeemable if, at the end of that regrettable episode, I was told, because I had it on in the background, but I was busy playing with my niece because that was a much more pleasurable experience than watching that garbage of Run Iris 1. I would have even, look, that episode was so bad, I would have even volunteered to change my niece's diaper, and I don't do diapers. The character can be redeemable because I was told that she made the decision to focus on journalism and reporting.
I was the one that mentioned that on the last podcast.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
So thank you for that. So if they stick to that and they have her investigating via journalism whatever the threats may be coming up, or helping Team Flash via her journalism, she could still be at Star Labs. I really don't care. But if she's helping them through her skill, which is apparently journalism, or so they tell us, then this character can still be redeemed. But the fact that she was so much the focus and so much the boss of everything, and being team coordinator. And like the problem is, if you're going to make her team coordinator, you can't have her say, wait, Caitlin and Cisco are discussing things. She can't go, huh? I don't understand that.
Yeah. I got you. It's the
perfect. Here's the problem. The Flash creative team wanted their version of Felicity Smoke.
Look, everybody knows. Okay.
Everybody knows that I cannot stand the marriage and the pairing of Felicity and Oliver. I hate that. to me, it's force fed on the audience, and I can't stand
it. It's mostly fan service. I can agree with you on that.
Yeah. The only ones that wanted are 14 to 27 year old girls. The one thing I will give Felicity is that when you see her doing scientific computery things, they've told us and they've showed us that she's an expert in that field.
Right.
Cisco is the Flash's Felicity, Adam. Flash already had
So here's my point. If you need a team leader, it's not the woman that Barry's screwing or the daughter of Joe West.
Okay.
She's not doing the science. She's not fighting crime. She's not doing the science stuff.
She's telling scientists and people with powers what to do.
She's not telling them what to do. Well. She's not telling them how to do what they're doing. She's just helping organize things.
But she can't organize a coffee machine.
How are you saying that? Lots of people, you don't need a PhD to have good organizational skills.
She has no organizational skill. Where did they ever show that? They never showed
You don't need...
The point is, in my opinion, if you wanted a leader of Team Flash that was competent, you could have had either Cisco
She's never shown it. She's not incompetent. She's not...
Yes, she is.
No.
In my opinion, she is.
Please tell me you're going to back me up here, Brandon.
Well, the thing is, I wanted him to finish his rant. And then, and you're done?
Yeah, I'm done. Go ahead.
Okay, Adam, you're wrong. No.
Yes.
No. Here's what I think, Adam. I think, in my opinion, you're being overly critical with the character. Now, I'm going to say this. I do agree with some of the points that you're saying. But one of the things that you have to appreciate, and you can't deny, is that same complaint that you're sharing, the actual writers made that complaint and addressed it within the show.
By saying that she's going to go back to reporting? Is that what you're saying?
No, by having Ralph challenging her position. Challenging why she's the leader. Because in that same episode of Run, Iris, Run, he actually challenges Iris, like, why should I take orders from you? He actually says those.
Right. But that's what, 3/4 of the way into the season?
No, but keep in mind this. Cisco and Wally are always on the field. Caitlin was gone. Harrison wasn't there. So how are Cisco and Wally going to go on the field if no one guides them?
Yeah.
So the basic solution is, maybe between seasons.
So she fell into the position.
Cisco showed her how to use the basic stuff of at least try.
Yeah, but I didn't see. But here's the problem. Unless you show me that, I have no. All I know is.
But here's the thing. They already mentioned that to a certain degree, because on season 3, on Flashpoint, who is giving Wally instructions? And not only that, Iris has an amazing investigative ability. That's why she's a journalist. So she knows how to track things. That's her thing. And they actually explore that.
They never actually showed it that much.
No. But they explored it a lot in this show, especially when she's trying to track Marlise. Like, they showed her investigative ability. They didn't show it from the beginning. I agree with you on that. But these are things that we have explored throughout. Like, especially in season 1, when she's aspired to be a writer on you don't see that much in between seasons, because I'm going to be honest, and not in every season. But this is their attempt of giving her a more prominent role. But why I think that episode of Run, Iris, Run is very important is because it makes the audience see that even she has made the realization of how incapable she is
to produce so now, at that level.
And if they stick with that.
And to do the best that she can, and they highlight the fact that she's just like a regular person, but she's doing the best that she can with what she can. That's why she goes back to blog.
If they stick with that, then I'll give them credit for it.
No, they have stuck with it, and they look like that.
But are they going to stick with it in season five? That's my question, and we don't know
But keep in mind this. This is the season where we see all the characters a lot closer to their comic book personas. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do. Because of course, we're speculating. But I think that you're being very too small-minded in that aspect, in my opinion.
But here's the thing, though. You're saying that they showed us examples throughout the seasons. I don't think they showed it well enough.
Okay, that's fair.
Even if that's right? the case, so though, not... I just can't. Adam, I'm sorry.
But you think Lana's great. And Lana was terrible.
No, she was great. She was great. But I still.
Well, Jordan, I'm going to say this. I'm not going to say you're wrong. But we all know that you can be kind of prejudiced with Smallville talks.
At least Brandon provided with some reasoning why he thinks that Iris is fine, and I countered with
now keep in mind I'm not saying that her character's perfect, but I still can't fathom
how this can possibly be this big an issue though. I just don't get it.
If you go on the internet, it's a big issue among
Flash. Well, I know. Adam's not the only one who's complaining about this, but I just don't. I still cannot wrap my head around even if I did have an issue, like it feels like a nitpick. It doesn't feel like this huge thing that ruins this season.
I agree with you, Jordan. I think it's a nitpick because I think that because of the type of actors that we've gotten for Iris and the way. And the fact that the writers have actively questioned the same things that we've questioned them, I'm going to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the things that we saw halfway through the season were a course correct from the writers because of how the fans have been reacting. But I think they did it well, though. Like, they didn't make it forced. And I think that's the other thing, Adam. They never forced anything that we saw. And I think you should keep that in mind also. They didn't force the idea. Like, they didn't just say, hey, this is the leader and that's it. They actually questioned it, and I think that's valuable to understand because they did.
I'm not saying they didn't question it at the end, near the end of the season.
They did it throughout the season, in the middle.
But more so when Ralph called her on it. I didn't see too many other characters saying, but why? Why would we go along with you?
Well, but keep in mind. But it also shows that they agreed to have her. Be that person.
Yeah, because of her relationship with Barry and because of her relationship with Joel.
Right.
This is why I think that, of course, I'm trying to put myself in the characters' minds, but this is why I think, because of their close relationship with her and because of her relationship with Barry and Joel, they would never question her on it, the main core guys. It takes an outsider like... Ralph to do that.
The other thing is they haven't questioned it because it has been working so far. So.
But did it look what it took? Look how long it took. Look what it took for them to take down. So her leadership wasn't stellar because right. So but my point is I see the point you're making, but at the end of the day, I still don't think the examples of all those qualities that I'm trying to tell you that she has. Were effectively shown throughout the season.
Well,
and for me.
Okay. I mean, Adam, you're still wrong, but. but I understand. I can see your point. But
like I said, I hope they go back to her helping the team throughout her reporting because I actually liked the character in seasons one and two. And in this one, every time she was on screen, I ended up rolling my eyes.
Well,
so I'm hoping they go back to, or they hold true to their promise near the end of season four, where
I honestly didn't when she was made the leader at the beginning of the season, I honestly didn't even think twice about it until I started hearing
of
you.
Of course you didn't, Jordan, because you come from the school of Lana's great and everything. So.
No, but that's the thing, Adam. It actually surprises me that you would question it that way. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but it does surprise me up to a certain degree because I mean, I've seen her as a leader before. Because look at it this way, when you're a writer as well, I mean, she knows what it is to be able to be an effective writer, effective journalist. There's that sense of urgency, that sense of taking control of a situation or what you're trying to pursue. So she has shown that quality. It just probably never been manifested in this way. It's the first, and the fact that they quote unquote.
Yeah, I don't think it ultimately was executed. Like I get what they were trying to do with her. Like through her reporting and all that, I just don't think it was executed in enough of a way to propel her into the status that she was in throughout season four. That's on the.
You felt that they left her in that position out of pity because she was the Flash's wife or girlfriend.
Well, like you said, she was the only at the beginning of the season. She was the only person to fill that role, right?
Right.
You said yourself she was the only one there.
Correct? No. Yeah, she was the only one there that could do that because Wally and Cisco were the ones actually going to the field.
Even throughout the season,
even when other people added, like Harry and Caitlin, the main reason she was the one behind the monitor is because she wasn't the only one, first of all, because she was in the monitor with other people as well. But they did allow her to make certain decisions just because it's like everything. When you're in a team, you got to have someone look at the bigger picture. For example, that episode where the mid-season finale, where they lose both Caitlin and both Barry and Caitlin get kidnapped. And there's that scene where Harrison actually tells them someone has to make that call. You know what I mean? Someone has to make the call of who we're going to search because we're overestimating our resources. A good leader doesn't have to have technical skills to make important decisions. What makes a leader is the decisions that are needed to make. They have the backbone to make the decision. It has nothing to do with skill. It has nothing to do with intelligence. It has to do with you being able to make a tough call with the information that's been given to you. And she was able to make that tough call. Because here's the thing. When you get, for example, Cisco and Caitlin, yes, they are super brilliant. But they're not the most sociable people or the people that probably can make the tough call. And maybe that's different. That's what they try to show us through Iris. She is that kind of character. And she's like that way in the comics, too. She's the kind of person that will make...
I think the comic character is vastly superior than the one we see. Oh,
no. I'm not saying anything. But she's the type of character that she has that backbone. She has that spirit where... She makes a decision and she's going to follow through no matter what's standing in her way. You know what I'm saying? And that core quality of Iris is still there. And
I just don't like the way it does define
leadership. As
I ultimately don't agree with the way it was executed. I don't like the way it was executed. And again, I don't think there's enough. The intent was there throughout previous seasons, but I didn't, again, the execution for me throughout the course of those seasons, like you were saying, wasn't there to make me believe in what I was seeing.
I believe in Iris West, even though Adam doesn't.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Awesome.
Well, I got one more positive before I know you got a theory you want to throw out there, Brandon.
Okay.
Which is the cubes from Earth 2.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, the breakup cube was kind of bad for Wally when that happened. But the sex cube when Cisco got it and Joe was like, "Don't open that here or whatever."
No.
The best. You have to say the line how Joe said it. Joe, can I use you? You take that to your house.
Oh yeah, that's what he said.
that was funny.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Good moment. But what's your final theory?
Well, here's what I think. There's a crazy theory, but I think I'm preaching to the what is it, preaching to the choir or whatever you say. But I think we can all agree that the Flash TV show exists within an alternate timeline, right? Sure. The correct timeline, quote unquote, is the one of the original Flash that tells Barry to not save his mother. That is the original current timeline. The show actually takes place in a third timeline, which is of the one we know. And one of the biggest points of that is the fact that one of the big points that they state in season one is that Harrison Wells accelerated everything. So Barry became the Flash a lot sooner.
Sure.
What if the mistake that she made, Nora made, was that Barry was supposed to die at the end of season four? And that's when he disappears. Even though it's not 2024, it was supposed to like his disappearance was supposed to happen a lot sooner now because Harrison accelerated everything.
Okay. I see what you're saying. That could be interesting.
You know what I'm saying? And the reason she went back is because she wanted her father alive, and they find a way to save his father's life, to save Barry, and save the timeline.
So she tried to do essentially. You think she tried to do essentially what Barry tried to do with Flashpoint?
Yeah, she tried to pull a Flashpoint, and it makes sense. Now the other thing is not as much of a theory, but as what I hope they do. Uh-huh. How do you guys feel about the rumors of who the villain is going to be? I mean, you guys have heard the rumors of who the villain for season five is going to be, right?
I don't think I've heard any rumors. No, what's the rumor?
There's rumors that the big bad is going to be Cicada. And they're going to...
I'm not entirely familiar with that
villain. Pretty much, it's not a sweetser. Pretty much, it's a... It's kind of like a Savitar take, but he's like a cult leader. And like immortal. Or he can suck the life force out of other people, something like that. And the way, like, the casting call for that character, like, they have it on the website or whatever, it's like someone that hates metahumans in general. And he wants to just eliminate metahumans all over.
Okay.
But, like, for example, in my case, my dream Flash series or season or what I really look forward to is, I think, and here's, remember I told you guys that I don't like how everything's been going on with Snart and stuff like that, is that, yes, we love them in Legends, but I hate what the Flash lost when they became heroes. Because the Flash lost the Rogues. You haven't seen the Rogues in like four seasons. Like, I think, and that's one of the big staples of the Flash universe.
Well, you can have all the rogues except for Captain Cold and Heatwave. You can have Mirror Master.
Captain Cold is the de facto leader. You know what I mean?
They could stray from the comics and have somebody else be the leader.
I agree with you. But I wanted this Snart because I love Wentworth Miller's portrayal.
That's understood.
Yeah, Snart has always been the leader, and I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and not only that, my big dream is, I think
in some cases he's like Flash's Joker, if you will, kind of.
Of course.
In some ways.
Yep.
I think ultimately it speaks to Reverse Flash in that role, but to some degree it's also him.
Yeah.
So that it's kind of like they're co-jokers to Flash's.
Yeah. So I want more of the Rogues, but I think I want to hear your opinion on this. In my opinion, I think we're ready for a nice arc where we bring back Eobard Thawne. I think we need that. I need that. I want that.
He teased it in Crisis on Earth X. He was like, I wonder what face I'll be wearing next time. So
and actually kind of lets you know that this is the same world, right? Like it's the same Eobard. I want them to do Reverse Flash Rebirth. I want to see that.
I'm right there with you. I hope we see that.
I really want to see that. I really
but,
do.
Uh, But yeah, your theories definitely are intriguing, and I could see them happening. But while we wait for season five, let's give a grade to season four. We're going to let our Flash expert go first. So, Brandon, what do you grade this thing?
I grade it at a B. Solid B. And I'm going to take advantage of this, and I forgot one big thing. This is one of the Flash seasons where they went above and beyond to present a lot of Flash elements. And I think one of the biggest elements that they introduced this season, which I love, is the idea of sharing Speed Force. That has never been explored before.
Oh, that was cool.
And that actually opened the door for speedsters sharing speed to super speed another speedster. And I can't wait to see that on screen.
Awesome. So that's a B from you. Jordan, where are you at in this in the grade for the season?
I'm at an A- for this season. I love this season. I thought it was awesome. Great villain. A lot of fun. Really interesting storylines. And a great setup for next season. So, yeah, I'm at an A-.
Well, for me, I gotta be honest, it was a little bit lower when we started this podcast. Talking about some things, it went a little higher. So that's good.
That is good.
Unfortunately, it's still my least favorite season of the four. And with that said, it's going to be a C+ for me.
C plus? Not even a B minus?
Nope, C plus.
Okay. You're still wrong, Adam. It's okay.
and that's the beauty of opinion. There's objective. And each person can view something differently.
Yes.
But yeah, that's, I mean, like I said, I'm still hopeful, and I still think that the show could, you know, still reach the heights of season one and two. But this season definitely wasn't there for me. And so I'm hoping for better things next season. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. We are part of the Batman Podcast Network, and there was some Batman talk at the beginning. But because you didn't get a full-on Batman episode this week from us, if you want more Batman talk, head over to the Batman Podcast Network. And there's a ton of Batman podcasts that you can choose from to quench that thirst in the meantime. If you want to find, well, there's two-thirds of us that you can find on social media.
At least on Twitter. Find me on social media, just not on Twitter right now. Yeah.
So, Brandon, if people want to talk to you about The Flash, where can they do that?
They can be comment sections of my mini articles that I've written for RegTheFans.com. They can look me up also on Twitter at Lexan Alvarado. That's Lexan Alvarado. I'm known there as a Scarlet fan.
All right, awesome. And Jordan, because you are a Twitter challenger, where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, well, again, I'm going to hold out hope that maybe by the time this episode releases, my lockout of Twitter will be over. But it currently is still going on, so unfortunately, I'm not on Twitter right now. But you can find me on other social media at BatFanJordanV. Yeah, and I want to listen to some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, well, we would appreciate hearing from you in the form of an iTunes review, and it would help us out. Thanks.
And if you want to talk to me, you can do that. And by the way, that includes if you're a fan of Iris West, you can still talk to me because that's cool. Because like I said, I welcome it all, and we can discuss it. And you can do that at Superhero Sci-Fi. Until then, have a fabulous week and a great weekend. So long, everybody.
Back cat forever from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.